My grandparents lived kind of in the woods. It was a 4-hour drive away, longer if there was traffic. And there generally was traffic because we would go to visit them for the holidays. So after fighting through holiday traffic and then winding through the hills and the mountains and over the rivers, through the woods to grandmother's house, we finally arrived. It was a really magical place. It was surrounded by really tall trees all packed together. The dirt up there was full of iron, so it was all red and had this really rich, earthy smell to it. Just so very, very different from home. And my grandpa had a big workshop that was full of his toys. His toys were things like lathes, milling machines, all kinds of cutting tools, drills. Inside of there, it was just shelves, floor to ceiling, full of who knows what kind of machinery parts. I don't know if anybody at my grandpa knew what those parts came from and what he intended to use them for. And as a kid, one of my favorite things about going to my grandparents' house was my grandpa's workshop and looking around at all these strange machines. I wasn't allowed to play with them because they were dangerous machines. My uncle actually lost a finger on one of those machines. So while I couldn't play in grandpa's workshop, my grandparents did have a really big basement, and it was equally stuffed full of all this stuff that you just accumulate over a lifetime of moving from place to place. Boxes of old dishes and appliances, Christmas decorations, lots of boxes of Christmas decorations. But most importantly to me as a kid, the basement had lots and lots of toys. In addition to all the clutter my grandparents had collected, they also still had a lot of the toys that my mom and my aunts and uncles had played with when they were kids in the 70s. Some of these were classic toys. There were, you know, letter blocks. There were those play school stackers. There's a wind-up. We still have this wind-up clock. I found it from who made this? This is a Fisher-Price clock. Yeah, this is really old, and it still works. Showing here. So this was built in 62 or possibly 68. Held up very well. It's wood covered in like paper decals on here, and then a music box on the inside. Okay, now it stopped. So, grandparents' basement, a lot of stuff in there. Not all these toys were in working order like that one. Some of them were well-worn, well-played with, and some of them were slightly dangerous. One of them was a monster-making machine where you melt tin. This is a children's toy where you melt tin in a little crucible, and then you pour it into a mold, and then you have a car or you have a monster in this case. I don't know if that was safe. I can't deny that that's cool. But it might have been recalled at some point. I'm not sure. Well, hello there. You are listening / watching the Untangling Toys podcast with me, Lego Master Model Builder Sam Sixeri. This is episode 2. We got the first one done, so we did another one. This is a show about all things toys and play and how to best use playtime to help the children in your life grow and thrive. Today, we're going to be talking about the durability of toys, and I'm going to be examining a toy that has definitely held up to the test of time. You might have even played with it yourself as a kid. I certainly did. It's kind of an interesting thing to be talking about how toys will hold up to the test of time. When you think of an old toy, you think like maybe something that shows up on the Antiques Roadshow, like a tin toy monkey. But I hate to break it to you, some of the toys you might remember are already old. I was looking up a toy for this show that I played with as a kid, and I couldn't find it. And then I put in the word retro, and then that description, and then it came up, and I was like, oh no, that's retro? My childhood is in the retro category? My point is that toys as a mass manufactured product really aren't that old. We don't have a lot of knowledge about how they'll hold up over time. Now, throughout civilization, yes, toys have been made, but they were made on like a smaller scale. Craftspeople would make toys that was sort of tangential to their main craft. A seamstress might make some dolls out of extra material, or a carpenter could make some wooden toys out of scraps for making something else. It's very different than today, where toys are mass produced. The toy industry today is not just something people do on the side. It's an over $120 billion a year market. That's a lot of toys. And my question is, should toys be long-lasting? Are toys something that should stand the test of time, or are they more consumable? My gut tells me that toys should be able to last a long time, not necessarily because they should be these things that weather the ages, but they should be able to hold up to play. You know, if a toy can't handle a kid playing with it, then I don't see how it would hold up to time. For example, here's an R2-D2 action figure. that my uncle played with when Star Wars came out in the 70s. And here's an R2, and here's an R2-D2 action figure that I played with in the 90s. This R2-D2 toy from the 70s, all of the details, all of R2-D2's little panels and lights were attached with a sticker. And over time, that sticker has worn away. And you can see on this R2-D2 action figure from the 90s, more of the details were molded into it. Here's another old action figure of mine. This is the green Power Ranger, and it's held up pretty well, but you can also tell that some things on it aren't holding up so well. The paint is scratching off. Some parts of it are a different kind of plastic that have yellowed faster than others. However, this action figure still has its morphing capabilities. And here is a very old toy. This is a replica of the Lewis Chessman, or the Uig Chessman. It's a medieval chess set carved out of ivory. So that's a toy that's really held up over the centuries. And technology and emerging technology is always going to have an impact on the quality of toys. We still have, wood toys. It's not because they were thinking, let's make a really long-lasting toy. It was because, what's a material that's cheap and easy to work with? Wood? Okay. Wood happens to last pretty long. When we get into plastic toys with injection molding, some people are saying these toys aren't as good. Some people are saying these toys are more hygienic because plastic is easier to clean. Nowadays, we've got 3D printing, and then environmental concerns are also on people's minds with whether these plastics can, be made out of a renewable material, plant-based material, or, coming back to wood. Technology and toys have always been intertwined. You can absolutely see that with these two R2-D2 toys separated by like 20 years or so. They just didn't have the injection molding capabilities to make this kind of an R2-D2 at the price that you could mass produce these ones. However, I'm not saying that cheap toys are wrong or bad. Growing up, one of my absolute favorite toys were those little wooden foam gliders that came in like a little envelope. I actually tried to find some. I went to many stores looking for these. These are Rothko foam gliders. Just like model airplanes, they had this incredible art on the side that some simple chunk of IP-branded plastic can bring a kid so much joy. Airplanes for the boxes. That some simple chunk of IP-branded plastic can bring a kid so much joy. It's trying to recreate those gorgeous images. I got off track there. My point being, those were cheap toys. Were they going to last a long time? No. Were they fun to play with? Absolutely. Do I have any from my childhood? Absolutely not, because I destroyed them playing with them. I think at one point I even tried taking a broken one and tracing it out on another piece of balsa wood so I could cut out a second one. The magic of toys isn't so much in the toy, it's in that it gets kids to play. And that can happen with any toy. Any toy can bring a kid a lot of joy. I saw this clip of a Santa, not a mall Santa, but I mean a guy who dressed a Santa. Look, if any kids are watching or listening, stop listening for the next 5 minutes or so. There was a gentleman, codename Saint Nicholas, and he was talking about how he would go to visit kids in the hospital. So in this clip I saw, he was talking about how going to see this really sick kid and how he brought him these cheap little Paw Patrol toys. The Santa was really impacted by how these cheap little chunks of plastic brought so much joy to a kid in a really bad situation. As much as I'm going to try to advocate for quality, creative play toys, and I have my qualms against a lot of the ways that modern toys are packaged and marketed to kids to make them want, and it's an issue, but at the same time, it just breaks my heart. It melts all of my logic, all of my cynicism that some simple chunk of IP-branded plastic can bring a kid so much joy. We're talking about kids having fun. And if a few bucks gets them a toy, a trinket that makes them happy, how can you argue with that math? Why am I arguing with that math? It's a bigger question than just like having tantrums in the toy aisle, wanting something because you saw it on a commercial. And obviously not everyone is in the position where they can buy a more expensive, higher quality toy that'll last longer. I just want to focus on the fact that kids can play with anything. Going back before there was a toy industry, kids would play with things that were made out of scraps of other things. So Yeah, obviously kids can get a lot of joy out of a cheap toy. I don't even like using the word cheap. Nevertheless, I am going to talk about some of the reasons, some of the good reasons that toys should be sturdy enough to handle play, that should be made out of quality materials. If you have fun playing with a certain kind of toy, no matter what, then you're having fun. There's no price point that legitimizes or illegitimizes a toy. So join me for today's episode of Untangling Toys, where we're going to talk about a very fun and very durable toy. This is a toy that has already lasted generations. I'm especially excited to talk about this toy, you know, being a Lego Master Model Builder. Yes, that's right. We're talking about that famous Scandinavian toy children all over the world love. You know what I'm talking about. Say it with me. Let's talk about Brio Wooden Trains. I promise I'm going to do an episode on Lego. I'll probably do several episodes on Lego. Lego is inextricably the thing I'm always going to when it comes to what is the standard for a good toy. But there's so many other toys out there to talk about as well. So let's go play with these. And this is episode 2 of the Untangling Toys podcast. This is a new podcast all about toys and play. So if you're enjoying the previous episode, or this is the first episode you've listened to, it would really help our show to get started if you liked and rated the episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening to podcasts. You can follow us on our socials at Instagram, TikTok, X. It's at Untangling Toys. And if you want to get in touch with us with ideas for future episodes, questions, anything like that, you can email us directly at untanglingtoys@gmail.com. And then, of course, if you're watching this, the video version of this on YouTube, you can also leave a comment there. We read those as well. New podcast. Support us by following, liking, rating. Be right back. All right, and welcome back, and welcome to the floor. Before we get started talking about wooden trains, I just want to talk about the floor. The floor is a great place to play. For one thing, kids tend to be shorter than adults, so the floor is easier to get to than higher tabletops. Also, if you drop something on the floor, it just goes to the floor. It doesn't really go anywhere. And then the other thing is the floor is just very expansive, whether it's your carpet or your hallway, whatever. It's lots of space for building worlds on the floor. All right, let's talk about these wooden trains. For those of you just listening, I've just upended a big old bucket full of wooden trains and train tracks here, and we're gonna talk about these fantastic toys. Brio was sort of the original wooden toy train system maker. They were founded in 1884 by Ivar Brengsten, who was originally a basket maker, then started making various wooden toys. Very similar, again, to the story of Lego's founder, Ole Kurt Christensen, who was a carpenter, and then started making wooden toys on the side, and that led to the making of the whole Lego company. Brio as a company was founded in 1908 when Ivar's three sons founded it and named it Brio. Brio is actually an acronym in Swedish. BR is brothers, I is Iverson, and then O is Osby. The city where the company was originally founded was Osby, Sweden. So we got another Scandinavian toy company here. So what makes the Brio train system so interesting is that it's kind of a basic toy, but it's also really genius. So the tracks, simple pieces of wood, solid wood, and a pretty good quality wood too. They don't even see that there, but it's a tight grain wood, so it can handle a lot of banging around. As you could see if you were watching this, I just upended a bucket of these all over the ground, which is generally how I store them. And yeah, they're really not getting banged up or anything because it's good quality materials. Now, the tracks are just grooves in the sides of these pieces of wood, and there's grooves on both sides of it, so you can flip them around. Doesn't really matter for straight pieces, but for curved pieces, that means you can have a curve going to the left or to the right. So very versatile, pretty ingenious way to get a lot out of a toy without having to, you know, make more pieces. The way you connect these tracks to each other is they have sort of a keyhole cutout or like a puzzle piece. There's a little bar and circle that come out one side, and then there's a matching cutout on the other side, and you just slot them in like that together. And then your train track is on its way to going off on adventures. It's not a particularly tight connection, but that's good for young hands because you don't need to be super strong to stick them together. All right, clear out a little space here. And the other thing about that tolerance that, you know, it's not so precise is that that means if you're making a big train track, you don't have to be exact with your layout. There's literally wiggle room. If something's not quite lining up down the line and you want to connect them together, you can bend those together. So generally have long straight pieces, curved pieces and then shorter straight pieces. This is actually the set I had as a kid. There's the instruction card to build it. And I had so much fun building this, not just in the instruction card way, but however I could come up with going over carpet, under things. So now that we have a track, what goes on train tracks? That's right. I think these trains are really what gets kids excited about playing with train tracks. Growing up, I was a Thomas the Tank Engine fan. Actually, this is one of my Thomas the Tank Engine toys I had. This is James, and you can see that James is pretty well-weathered. He has been a very useful engine. This isn't a Brio toy. This won't go on the tracks, but Brio does make Thomas the Tank Engine licensed engines and trains. The trains are also made out of wood, but then they have some various metal fittings on there. Like the wheels on this one are plastic held together with metal screws on there. And then there, this is a particularly long train, so it has a connector so that way it can go around curves easily. And on the back of pretty much all the trains and cars are a set of magnets, and that lets you easily connect an engine. Oops, you gotta get the magnets going in the right way. That lets you easily connect a train to a car, to another car, to another car. Oops. And before you know it, we've got a train! It's really simple to do. This is a toy that little kids can easily figure out. The width of those grooves on there is pretty genius because if you're, you know, even if you've never used this before, if you pick one of these things up and you try to put it on a track, before you know it, it's just gonna fall right into where it belongs. A gentle, simple pushing motion, it's gonna run it on the track wherever it goes. That is just a really satisfying toy. Yeah, two things about building train sets that I think is great for play. One, it kind of goes along with making maps. I don't know if a lot of other kids did this, but making maps or looking at maps was really exciting as a kid because it's like the world is so big and new to you. To see a map is this thing that's like, oh, here's the definition of the world, of all those mysterious places. So if you ever popped open the front pages of The Hobbit, and oh, here's the map. Okay, so all these places that they went to, there's the Misty Mountains, there's Mirkwood, there's Hobbiton, all these things, it's all on there, and I can see it and understand where all these things go. And then also, you look at the corners of the map, and it's like, ooh, what is over there? What's this place? They didn't mention that in the story. I want to know more about that. I think making train tracks, it goes along with fascination with maps, of making maps, of exploring maps. The other cool thing about trains that I think kids really like is the repeatability of it. So you build a train track, and that's a lot of fun. But then you want to see what happens. So what happens when I do this? All right, that's what happened. I want to do it again. Is it going to keep doing that? I want to do it faster. I want to do it in reverse. Whoops, derailment. Train tracks are kind of this closed system for experimentation. You make the track, and whatever you run across it, you know, it's kind of like programming code. Everything should happen time after time again, unless you change a variable. Assuming I keep up the same speed here, my train should keep going. All these cars should stay on there. But what if I attach more cars? Like, how many cars can this take before it's too heavy to pull? It's getting there. Or can I pull it this way? Or what if I use the green engine? Can the green engine pull as much weight as the black engine can? It's not like you're just doing the same thing over and over again and not thinking. It's you're doing the same thing over again to try to see why it's even doing that thing in the first place. We've just been talking about the basic shapes here. Curved pieces, short pieces, long pieces. They do make some other really interesting elements to this. Bridges. This is a big old chonky slope piece to make a bridge. So it's like a track piece, except it slopes upwards. Still has those grooves in there. Still has that keyhole cutout. I'm trying to find the... Oh, there it is. There's the other half of it. And then you could put a straight piece of track onto there like so. And now you've got a bridge for your train to go up. And now, here's the really fun thing. Now we've got some height, and that means when we let go, Hey, it's going to roll. It will now go on its own. So we're kind of verging into Hot Wheels territory here, where when you get your trains up on some elevation, then it's a lot of fun to see where they go when you drop them. This is a sort of basic train track swapper or switch track. But if you're making a whole bunch of train tracks, you know, really building up that map, this one's missing a small piece right there. However, I have that piece, and it's going to be really easy for me to pop that right back in there with a little bit of wood glue. Your train can be on this track over here. You go across this crazy diamond pattern, and now you're on this track over here. So, you know, if you built one loop, then you can get really excited there by going off into other loops. And then there are some more interesting bits that have come out in the, I was going to say more recent years, but now these have actually been out for a while. This is a switch track that has a little plastic button on there, so you can actually tell the trains which way they have to go. So rather than the other one where they'll go that way, push it that way, and the train will go that way. Will it go that way? Or if we switch it there, will it go that way? And then it can get really over the top with some other things, like this is a little guardhouse. There are definitely some more elaborate elements that they've made for these, especially connected to the Thomas the Tank Engine licensing. If you're not familiar with Thomas the Tank Engine, really goes well with this wooden train system. Thomas the Tank Engine is a series of stories written by Reverend W.A. Awdry or Reverend A.W. Aubrey, I'm getting his name wrong, but it's about the adventures of trains on the island of Sodor, and all their stories are about places and things that trains can do on a railway. I actually didn't have any of these Thomas ones growing up as a kid. However, I bought these a few years ago secondhand so I could play with my nephews and niece and the wooden trains. You can see that they've got a little bit of wear and love on them, but these have stood up really well. So if you are looking to get some wooden trains, if you look for somebody selling a set secondhand, they are durable. So you could probably get a pretty good deal on a whole mess of wooden trains if you found it secondhand. Toys that are built to last can also last when you come up with ways of playing with them that the creators might not have had in mind. The toy has the potential to be used in other ways without breaking and without disappointing the child who's playing with them. You know, when a toy is made quickly, cheaply, and simplistically, and you try to do something with it that it wasn't meant to, it'll probably not last that long. And that can be really disappointing for kids because, you know, kids probably are not evaluating the toy on like, oh, look at the quality of the fine grain wood on this. Look at the tolerances on the wheels on this. They're just like, toy, train, play. I've got ideas now. I want to see what happens when I do this. And unfortunately, with toys that aren't quite as well made, a lot of times the result can be it broke. And that's really disappointing. When a toy can hold up to unusual and new ideas of play, that just keeps that creative process going. Another great thing about a toy lasting through time is that one generation becomes endeared with it and another generation becomes endeared with it. And then people add onto it and make new and exciting things. I'm definitely really excited about some of these new ones that Brio is making. This is a radio-controlled car that can go on these wooden tracks. It's not made out of wood. It's metal, plastic, batteries. Still fits on the track system and still uses magnets to connect them. And in fact, it's fully compatible with existing bits there. But then it also has this little train controller. Oh, we're going forward. That's so cool. And then, can we go backwards? Oh, it's a tough hill. I think I can. I think I need to change the batteries on this. Yeah, see, you go forward, backwards, back it up. Yeah. And whoop, stop. And then we have lights. I believe this is a horn. I don't know if it's making noise. Let me see. Oop. I don't know why the horn's not making noise. I also bought this secondhand, and it's held up to whichever child played with it before, and now when I play with it with my nephews and niece. Even though this is plastic, this is newer, they definitely put a lot of thought into making sure it wouldn't break. And they even thought about, what if the kid loses the remote, or the remote loses batteries or something? Well, it also has controls on here. You can push a button, and it'll go forward. You can push a button, and it'll go backwards. and you can push a button and it'll stop. That's one reason that I think Brio is an exceptional toy company. They do put quality into making all of their trains and tracks. This is another battery-powered Brio train. This one's not remote control. So you just push forward, it goes forward. Oh no! All right, that one's got a little more torque in it. There's another cool ancillary product that's come out for building bridges for your wooden train tracks that it's a little more versatile than this. These are little plastic connectors, and on the top side of them, they have that cutout just like on the wooden train tracks. So the wooden train track will fit together on there nicely. But on the bottom side, they have a connection to Lego Duplo bricks. So you can stick them on there like that. That's really easy to make some bridges. These are track connectors made by a company called Toy 2. And they're also a Danish company like Lego. I think a lot of people have been 3D printing things like this. It's sort of part of a movement to let toys connect with other toys, like, you know, getting your Duplos to connect to your Brio tracks or getting your Kinects to connect to your Lego bricks. I like these because they're injection molded. They're pretty strong. They're pretty good at connecting to the Lego pieces, and they can hold up to the kind of forces I imagine they will be getting when they are being connected to wooden train tracks, which could be a lot. So you can have a piece just going like that, and then you go up to the next bit. One is going to be a little bit higher. I'm probably going to run out of room here. Hopefully you get the idea. There we go. Let's see, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1. Let's see if our remote-controlled train can handle that. It's doing it. It's going up the slope. It's going up the slope. No, stop. Don't go any further. So that's holding up real well. It's kind of starting to shake a bit there, but what we can do is add a little bit bigger of a footing on our Duplo towers. There we go. See, now we're building some Lego wooden train bridges here. So I think these are a lot of fun. I would have absolutely loved to have something like these adapters so I could play with my Duplo Lego bricks and my wooden trains. You don't necessarily need to have these connectors. You could always just place the tracks directly onto whatever building blocks, building toys you have. Yeah, you can still have a lot of fun with that way. These just sort of help it stay in place a little bit better. And then one more thing, talking about playing with your Lego toys and your wooden trains, there are companies out there that are making wooden trains that connect to Lego pieces. This is from a company called Zany Trains. The bottom of it is a wooden train base, but then there is a Lego compatible plate on top of there, so you can make Lego trains which can run on your wooden train tracks. And they still have the magnet on there, so you could connect it to other cars and build your trains that way. Lego, the company itself, doesn't officially make one of these, so this is made with compatible bricks, but non-Lego bricks. And it doesn't mean you can't have fun with it, too, or use your own Lego bricks on it. What we basically have here is a 4x10 Lego plate glued onto a wooden train base, which is a great idea, and there's no reason you can't do this yourself. We talked a little bit how there's varying qualities of wooden toy train companies out there. Brio has a really good commitment to making a good toy. There's also a lot that are making them not so great. They're still fun. They're just kind of, you know. However, they can be a good bit cheaper. This is one that I got pretty cheaply at a thrift store. This is before I found out about this thing from Zany Trains, and I wanted to put Lego on my wooden train tracks. I pulled off the little wooden top parts to it, which I didn't really like anyway. And then all I did was pretty much do what they did here. I hot glued a 4x8 Lego plate onto here. I like using hot glue for modifications because it's reversible. Yeah, hot glue is good because it's fast acting. For the most part, it's reversible. If you wanted to pull that off of there, actually, I think one of these came off not that long ago. Yeah, if you wanted to pull that off of there, you could. Yeah, so that's wooden trains for you. Let's end the show by going through my 10 question checklist on what makes for a good toy. Question number one, how easy is it to learn? Very easy. I think anybody can pick up these tracks, and even if you don't know what they are, just by fiddling around with them, you'll discover that, oh, those connect together. Those go like that. The wheels of the trains will fall into those grooves and you'll be off like that. The magnets will magnetically connect all on their own and they will not connect in the reverse polarity way. Yeah, this is a great toy for learning to use. You don't need any directions. It's one of those things where the form follows the function so easily for any age. Number two, can it be used in more ways than just the instructions say? Yes. In fact, I'm not even too sure most wooden train sets come with instructions other than... They come with suggestions, but they're more like guidelines than actual rules. It's a super open-ended toy. Question number three, is it long-lasting and durable? I would absolutely say so, considering that all of these wooden trains and tracks that we're playing with are either mine from my childhood or somebody else's from their childhood, and they have all held up really well. Even the ones that have broken in bits are really easy to repair. I think Brio is pretty proactive about making a toy that won't break, or if a thing goes missing, like with the controller here, there's still a way to play with it. Number four, can it be easily used with other toys? As we can see here, this can definitely easily be used with other toys. Even without using, buying these special Duplo track connectors or these Lego wooden train things here. I played with these without having those, and I would use a stack of books to make bridges to go up and down places. If you do like playing with Lego and wooden trains, I think getting some of these Lego to wooden train connectors or making some of your own are fantastic, especially because these wooden trains are a pretty good scale for Lego minifigs. Number five, is it messy? We've made quite a mess all over the floor here. We got Duplo bricks out, we got trains, we got Lego system pieces all over the place, and we got all these little connector bits. However, if you were only playing with the wooden connectors and the trains, you know, they're not small bits. They will be easy to clean up, throw back into the box. Not a lot of tiny bits. I would say they are an easy to clean up toy. Number six, is it expensive? They've started to get kind of pricey for some of these new Brio sets, but I do think Brios are definitely worth it. They can be more expensive than the other ones, but it's really good quality and it'll just last such a long time. I would say like start with a small Brio set, and if you like it, you can add on, you can get pieces from other brands, they're compatible, and you can also look for these secondhand because they're so well built, they will hold up. You get them secondhand, great deal. If you're getting them new, definitely worth it because they're going to last so long. Number seven, will it grow with age and development? I think so, especially if you start adding some things that let you connect your Lego toys onto it. You could be playing with the basic stuff at a very young age. I think if you've got a kid who is interested in trains, this is a toy that they will enjoy for many years, probably all the way up until they start, building model railway sets. It's a little bit less flashy than Hot Wheels, but it's a toy that kids who are interested in, rolling cars and vehicles around and up ramps will enjoy and will find really fun ways to do things with as they get older. It's a toy that can grow with age. Is it trendy? Are these trendy? I don't think they're trendy. I think these are a classic toy that has grown relatively slowly. Brio continues to make new innovations. I just saw that they have a new car. It's one of these that's motorized. You put water in it and then little steam clouds come out of it as it drives around. That is fantastically cool. We can look back at the history of these toys and see that it's not a flash in the pan. I don't think wooden trains have ever been a flash in the pan. They came out and it was a really great idea. And it's just continued to basically be the same idea without too much alteration to it. The cars can be trendy, Yeah, they make a lot of cars nowadays. Now with the new Thomas the Tank Engine shows, they make all kinds of new characters. But the basics of it, I think, are fantastic, have held up to time, and will continue to hold up to time. Is it kinetic or does it require a lot of mobility? Yeah. Doesn't have to be. I'm having some challenges just getting around the floor, playing with all of it. This is definitely a toy where the kid will expand out across the entire carpet and play with it. You could play with it in a smaller scale. I've seen the wooden train tables, which seem like a pretty good idea. I've never played with one, but I've seen them. If you want to confine this to one play area that's got maybe some mountains and geography for the trains to go up and down and around, that could help with containing this play to a smaller area and not having to be on the floor. Obviously, it's a very hands-on tactile toy. You move it around with your hands, you connect the pieces together. Lots to grab onto, lots to take apart and break apart when you're all done. And then even if you didn't want to build tracks and you just wanted to play with the trains, these are fun train toys to play with, not on the tracks, just on the carpet. A wooden floor might be a little bit easier. I think this toy leans toward being more mobile, active while you play with it, but it can also be something that you just have fun playing with right here in front of you. And then lastly, number 10, is it teaching something well? Or is it teaching something and does it teach it well? We talked about this earlier, mapping out your world. I think it does teach a little bit of that, of saying, okay, I've built a loop over there. I've built straight tracks over here. There's a bridge over there. And just sort of starting to build a larger spatial concept of your environment. Another good thing I think this toy teaches is, because these sets, they don't have a ton of parts. This was a set I got, and it's probably a largish set, and you can buy expansion parts, but you have a limited amount of track pieces to build with. That means, how will I strategically use the resources I have to do what I want to do? Let's say I want to get over here, go across the bridge over there, make a turn, come under the table, and come back to here. Well, I only have so many curve pieces to use, so many straight pieces, so many bridge support pieces. I think what it teaches is, how can I more effectively use the parts that I have to accomplish a goal? And how can I find new ways to maybe accomplish that goal? How can I find a shortcut if I ran out of pieces? I would definitely run out of the straight pieces all the time. So I would take curve pieces, and if you just keep connecting curve pieces back and forth, you make this snake pattern. And so your train can still go forward. It's a little twisty-turny. All right, and that'll do it for this week's episode of Untangling Toys, a podcast all about toys and play. Remember, we're a new podcast, so if you're enjoying the show and you want to help us out, like us, follow us, and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can follow us on all of our social medias at Untangling Toys. That's at Untangling Toys on TikTok, on Instagram, on X. And if you have any questions about toys or play or suggestions for future episodes, please let us know. You can reach out to us at untanglingtoys@gmail.com. Or if you're watching this on YouTube, you can leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Well, I gotta clean up this mess now. Thanks for listening to the show. I'm Sam Saxeri, and I'll be back next week with another deep dive into the world of play, and I'll have another toy to review for you.
Bye.
Oh no, it's going off the edge. Untangling Toys is a Clamor Audio production distributed by the Cloud 10 Network. Hosted and executive produced by me, Sam Saxeri. Executive produced by Aaron Hilliard. Clamor General Manager Rich Statter. Associate Producer Ethan Aronson. Post-production supervised by Devin Ruskin. Production Assistant Samara Mullick. And special thanks to Sim Sarna and Saiba Krieger at Cloud 10.